So let me just remind you where we are and what's going on in 2 Corinthians. The Apostle Paul is talking about his ministry. Well, he's talking about the New Covenant ministry in general and how it's a glorious thing because people get saved through the preaching of the gospel. Like he says in Romans 1, I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation. And so what Paul has been talking about here is, yes, we have a glorious gospel and we have a glorious message, but he admits that he himself isn't glorious. The message is glorious, but we are weak. We are poor. He himself talks about how he is hurt and persecuted everywhere that he goes. He has a very difficult life. But in spite of all his difficulties and his persecutions, he does not quit. He will not stop preaching the gospel because this is how people get saved and this is how God gets glorified. So he's like, if people can get saved and people will, and God will be glorified, I'll take the pain and I'll keep on going. That's what he's been talking about. And so this is, that brings us to our text for today, which is right at the end of chapter 4. Verses 16 to 18. So, 2 Corinthians chapter 4, starting in verse 16, he says, therefore, we do not lose heart, even though our outward man is perishing, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory, while we do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. Amen. In the book of Job, chapter 5, it says, man is born unto trouble, as the sparks fly upward. Why do sparks fly upward? I don't know. It's physics. I don't know the physics, but it's just natural. It's just natural. That's how things are. And man is born unto trouble. Why? Because that's how things are. It is natural. Because by nature, we are born sinful, and we live in a sinful world, and because we live in a sinful world, everything is broken. And that's why we have troubles. Everything is broken around us. Stuff, everything just rots and decays. Our bodies rot and decay. And relationships are ruined. Relationships between people are ruined. Our relationship with God is ruined. Everything is just falling apart. Even when you think that things are going well, just when you think that everything is going just right, something will happen to mess everything up. So how do you deal with all that? How do you just not give up? And this is what Paul is talking about here. Because he has been talking about all these troubles that he is going through. But we do not lose heart, he says. So this is what we're going to talk about today. And you may be thinking, Nico, who are you to tell us about how to deal with suffering? What have you been through? We have gone through all kinds of stuff. You're just a kid. You haven't gone through anything in your life which has been terrible. And you're right. I'm sure most of you have gone through things in your lives that are far worse than things that have happened in my life. You're right. But the Apostle Paul, who wrote this, has gone through way more than what most of us combined have gone through. And so Paul has the right to talk about this. Paul has the right to talk about what it is like to suffer and what your mindset should be when you're going through that suffering. So let's see what he has to say. Think about this. Paul, at this point, when he's writing this letter, he had been a Christian for 20 years. Okay? In those 20 years, and he still has a way to go. He still has like 10 years ahead of him. In these 20 years, up until this point where he's writing this letter, he's already been imprisoned many times. He's been He's received the 39 lashes from the Jews 5 times. He's been beaten with rods 3 times. One time he was stoned at Lystra. They stoned him. He has been through dangers in sea, in the wilderness, in the city. He has had trouble with his own countrymen, with the Gentiles, with false brethren. He has been attacked by robbers and thieves. He's been hungry. He's been naked. And a little bit before he wrote this letter, he talks about this back in chapter 1. A little bit before he wrote this letter, something happened. We don't know exactly what it is. We can't be sure. But something happened to him which was so bad that he said, "We despaired of life itself." Things got so bad where he finally reached the point he said, I can't go on anymore. I can't do this anymore. That was the Apostle Paul, right before he wrote 2 Corinthians. And can you blame him? Everywhere he goes, he has trouble within the church from amongst believers, or false believers, we know, and the rest of the world is trying to kill him. Everywhere he's going. But something has changed. Something has changed in his thinking. At this moment, from the time where he was despairing until when he writes this letter, something has changed. I want you to look back in the same chapter, chapter 4. We looked at this a while back. Look at verse 8 in chapter 4. He says, "We are hard pressed on every side, yet not crushed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Struck down, but not destroyed." From the time when he was losing heart, and from the time that he was despairing, till this point where he is not despairing anymore, something has changed. The suffering has not changed. He's still being persecuted. He's still having pain. He's still having all the problems that he was having. But he says, "We don't despair. We keep on going. We don't lose heart." Now go down to verse 16, which is our text for today. He says, "Therefore, we do not lose heart. Even though our outward man is perishing, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day." We don't lose heart. We don't quit. We keep on going. We keep on fighting. Even though our outward man is perishing. What is the outward man? Well, it definitely includes our bodies, that's for sure. Every moment that we're alive, we're getting closer to dying. Every moment that goes by, things just work a little bit less well. And I know you're those of you who are older than me are thinking, "Nico, you're 40 years old. You're fine. You're fine." But I remember what it was like being 20. And it's not the same at all. All right? The energy, the strength. I go to work now, lift boxes for a few hours, and then I have to go home and recover. It's tiring the older you get. Okay? Paul, in the same chapter a bit earlier, said that we're clay pots, we're earthen vessels, we break very easily. So the outward man definitely includes our bodies. But I think it's something a bit more than that, because what Paul has been talking about when he refers to us as clay pots, as earthen vessels that break very easily, he was saying that we're hard-pressed, we're perplexed, we're close to despair. Those are not necessarily physical things. I think when he says the outward man here, he's not just talking about physical problems and getting older. He's talking about emotional problems, psychological problems, mental problems. Just the outward man is just who we are by nature. By nature, who we are. And the thing is, who we are by nature is sinners. And sin affects all of us. It affects our minds. That's why we don't think clearly and we think things that are wrong. It affects our will. That's why we like things that we shouldn't like and we don't like things that we should like. It affects our emotions and we love things that we shouldn't. It affects our body. That's why we get sick and we die. Sin just affects all of us. So I think when he's talking about the outward man, he's not just talking about the body. He's just talking about who we are by nature. and that's perishing. Our bodies and our minds, everything is wasting away. I was thinking about that, and I was like, that's why, for the unbeliever, getting old and dying is extremely grim. Because there is nothing to look forward to. Things are not going to get better. This is all he has, and it's just decaying away. That's it for the unbeliever. Now, Paul is saying how outward man is decaying, and in his case specifically, he's not merely talking about getting older. He is living a life full of persecutions and beatings and lashes and all these things. Everyone gets older. Even if you're never persecuted, you get older. Unbelievers get older. Everyone gets older. But for a Christian who is faithful, there is the added suffering of suffering for Christ's sake. Even unbelievers suffer. But for the Christian, being faithful to God, going against the way the world works, can cause all kinds of troubles for you. People will dislike you. People will speak against you. People may not give you a job. And of course, there are places in the world where they will imprison you and kill you. There's all kinds of trouble merely for being a Christian, on top of things that we all go through just for being human. So Paul, who's going through all of this, is like, man, our outer man is decaying. But, he says, the inward man, though, is being renewed day by day. So what's the inward man? Well, it's difficult to describe it exactly. I think the inward man is talking about that part of us that has been born again. That part of that new creation that process that has started and will be completed on the last day when we're raised from the dead. But the fact that we've been born again, that part of us that we were born like this, the natural, the outward man, but now since we've been regenerated, we have this inward man, this man that is being conformed to the image of Christ. And he says that is being renewed day by day. How does that happen, Paul? How come you don't lose heart in spite of all these things? How come you think that you're renewed day by day, really? Where do you get the strength to keep on going, Paul? Well, he's going to tell us in verses 17 and 18. Look at this. Verse 17, he says, "For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory, while we do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal." The reason he doesn't lose heart, the reason he's renewed day by day, is because he has his eyes focused on the eternal glory that he will have. He sees by faith what the end is going to be. And that's what keeps him going. This is what gives him strength to persevere. And of course, this can only work if you have faith. If you don't believe it, you're going to lose heart. He compares the afflictions that we have now with our future glory. Okay? Now listen to these words. He calls the afflictions that we have now light and for a moment, in contrast to the glory that we will have, which is eternal and weighty and heavy. Okay? Those are the two contrasts. The affliction is now, the glory is in the future. The affliction is momentary, it's just for a moment, while the glory is eternal. The affliction is light, but the glory is weighty. Those are the two contrasts. And I can see people reading that and being seriously offended. Light? Affliction? Do you know what I've been through? Paul, you don't know that what I have gone through. You don't have the right to call it momentary and light. You know that Paul, who wrote this, had affliction for a lifetime. Right? Paul didn't have a difficult ministry and then get to retire somewhere and go rest and relax and go to the beach and put his feet in the water and have grandkids and stuff like that. No, Paul had affliction and persecutions until they killed him for 30 years. And he says, it's just for a moment. Is he crazy? Or is he simply saying, well, compared to eternity, it's just a moment. I know that when you're going through it, it doesn't feel like it's a moment. But he says, it's just for a moment. And then we have eternity to look forward to. When we have the new heavens and the new earth, and you've been given new bodies, and we're all alive, and there's no more pain, and there's no more death, and God has wiped away every tear from our eyes, and when we've been there 10,000 years, bright shining like the sun, are we going to be like, I don't know, are we going to be like, do you remember that pain that we had back then? You're going to be like, pain? I don't know if we'll remember it. I don't know. Paul says this life is just going by quick. In the book of James, James says that this life is like a vapor. You know how you go out on a cold winter's day and the breath goes out and there's this thing for, it's just for a second and then it's gone. This is what this life is like compared to eternity. This is going by in a moment. This life is just momentary, but that is eternal. So he says the suffering of this life is for a moment. It's not for eternity. And he says it's light. Really? Light? Jesus said, come unto me, all you who are weak and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Really? Is it light? Because Jesus said, you got to take up your cross every day and follow me. You got to be willing to suffer and die for me. Is that light? Is that a light yoke? Again, compared to the how solid and weighty the glory is that we're going to have. Yeah, they have that affliction. That's nothing. That's what Paul says. He speaks of the weight of glory, of this eternal weight of glory. And he says it is a far more exceeding eternal weight of glory. A far more exceeding. I was looking at that in the Greek and I was like, I can see why they say far more exceeding, because they don't know how to translate it. Here's what it says in the Greek. Hypervolin is hypervolin. Hypervolin is where you get hyperbole from. Okay, hypervolin, hyperbole. So literally, he says, it's going to be a hyperbole upon hyperbole eternal weight of glory. It's exaggeration upon, do you know how glorious it's going to be? It's exaggeration upon exaggeration. I don't know how else to say it. That's how great it's going to be. So we can't even describe how glorious it's going to be. So if we have our eyes fixed on that, if we constantly remember that what is awaiting us is eternal, and it is so glorious you can't even describe it, then when affliction comes, we're not saying it's going to be easy. We're saying we won't lose heart because we know what is awaiting us. In Romans 8, Paul says, for I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. I mean, you can't even compare it. It is going to be so glorious you can't even imagine. So number one, he says that our suffering now is momentary and light, but there's also something else that is not implied, it's kind of says it. Our suffering in this life is also meaningful. There is a purpose to it. Where do you see it? Where do you see that? I'll tell you. He could have said, look at the verse now. He could have said, for our light affliction, which is but for a moment, will be followed by a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. He could have said that. First you have this, and then you have an exceeding weight of glory. He could have said that, and that would have been great on its own. First you have this, and then you have that. But he doesn't say that. What does he say? He says, for our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. Katergazome is the Greek word. It's producing. What we're going through now, the suffering that we're going through now, is going to produce an eternal weight of glory. There's something behind this. There's something more. It's not just meaningless, purposeless pain, and then, things will turn out well at the end. No, this is part of a process which will conclude in glory, what you're going through right now. I know when we go through pain, it may feel like it's senseless and pointless and purposeless, and why? There's no reason for this. What does Scripture say in Romans 8:28? For we know that all things, and that includes pain and suffering that we go through in this life, all things work for the good of those who love God, who have been called according to His purpose. Paul believed that. And so when things go bad, he doesn't lose heart because he knows that it's working out for something good in the end. If you don't believe that, when bad things happen, you will lose heart. There's no point to anything. I just quit. But Paul doesn't do that. So he says that he's being renewed daily. So where does his strength come from? Look at verse 18. This light affliction is working and exceeding an eternal weight of glory. Verse 18, while we do not look at the things which are seen, but the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. Really quick, just a really quick side note. Unfortunately, a lot of people just take this verse in isolation, and they kind of get the wrong impression of what Paul's talking about here. When he's talking about things that we see and things that we don't see, he's not contrasting our physical existence with spiritual. That's not what he's doing here. He's not contrasting bodily and non-bodily existence. What he is contrasting is the present world with the future world, which we don't see yet. We see the world around us that exists right now. We don't see the future world, which is coming in the future. Okay, that's what he's talking about here. Because in the future, when we have the new heavens and the new earth, when we have our resurrected bodies, that's going to be very physical. We're not going to be spirits floating around. We're going to be actual physical beings who are indestructible and eternal. Okay, that's what he's talking about here. So he's contrasting the present life with the future life that we don't see yet. So he says, we don't lose heart. How? Because we look at that which cannot be seen. That's an interesting statement. We look at that which can't be seen. We don't fix our eyes on the things that are seen. If we did that, we would lose heart. Okay? If all you cared about, if all you focused on was the world around you right now, just like I know people who all they do is watch news all day, and they are so depressed. Because if this is it, everything is falling apart. And it's like, you're going to be depressed if this is all you're looking at. But he says that's not all we focus on. We focus on that which cannot be seen. How do you do that? By faith. And in this same book, he's going to say we live by faith, not by sight. Because if it was just up to the things that we see, oh boy. But we know that there's something greater than that. We look to our future glory, therefore we do not lose heart. You know what? Before we close, I would like you to see a passage. Turn with me to Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews 11, verse 1 says, now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. So he's going to give a list now of people who had faith, who believed in things that they didn't see, but they believed them. Why? Because God said so. That's what faith is. I can't see it, but I know it's true because God said so. That's faith. Okay? So we're going to get a list now of people who believed in God and trusted in Him, even though they didn't see the fulfillment of the promise yet. Look at verse 8. Hebrews 11, verse 8. He says, by faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive his inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith, he dwelt in the land of promises in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. He trusted God. God told him, I will give you a place. And he was like, I know there's something more than just living in tents in Canaan. He's looking for a city that God is going to make. And so he trusted God. Go to verse 13. It's been talking about Jacob and Isaac and Sarah. Verse 13. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they had called to mind that country from which they came out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. They had a hope. There's something more than just this. They had faith in God. There's something more than just this. There is a heavenly country that we're waiting for. Look at verse 24. 24. By faith, Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. Moses could have stayed in Egypt and could have lived a very satisfying, for the moment, life in sin. But he said, no, there's something far greater at the end with being with God and the people of God. And so I'm going to go there. There's something more than this. So he gave up his life, which could have been very comfortable, for a very discomfortable, uncomfortable life with the people of God. Jump down to chapter 12. Go to the next chapter. Forget the chapter division. Go straight to chapter 12. And listen to these words in verse 1. After he's spoken of all these people who had faith, he says, therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. How? Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. The writer of the Hebrews says, Jesus, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross. Jesus suffered immensely. He was beaten. He was tortured. He was stripped naked and hung up to die for the world to see. Why did he do that? He did that voluntarily. He said, no one takes my life from me. I'll lay it down on my own accord. Why did he do that? Because he knew that there was something joyous that was going to come in the end. He knew that all of the suffering that he was going to go through was going to produce something glorious in the end. And so he endured the cross for that. And look at verse 3. For consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. How do you not become weary and discouraged in your souls when you're going through all the difficulties that you go through in life? How do you not lose heart, as Paul said, when he's going through all the sufferings that he's going through? The writer here says, consider Christ. Think about Jesus, who suffered for us to bring something glorious in the end. Consider Christ, who suffered for us and then has gone to prepare a place for us. And so when we keep our eyes focused on that, what Christ has done for us as an example of someone who suffered for knowing the joy that would come in the end. When we know that there's that glory that will come in the end, a glory which cannot be described that is so great, he says, don't lose heart, because we know what's coming. Thank you for your attention. Let's pray.